Tragically, airplane accidents have been in the news far too frequently as of late. And with reported crashes on the rise, you've probably heard the resurfacing of an old internet urban legend. The urban legend that airplane crash positions are designed to kill you. Crash positions, or brace positions, are made to ensure the least amount of injury possible when someone is involved in a plane accident. However, with stories of lawsuits and damage claims when people are injured or killed in the event of a plane crash, the urban legend states that brace positions are actually designed in order to ensure a quick death, all in an effort for airlines and plane manufacturers to pay out as little money as possible in injury claims after a crash. Is there any truth to this, and what is the story of airline brace positions anyway? That's what I want to talk about today. We're going to talk about brace positions and the accidents that inspired them, as well as the theory that they're just a hidden form of euthanasia to see if it has any legs. Or wings, I guess. Before we begin, I want to say thank you so much to everyone who showed support for the videos being uploaded over on Spotify. It means a lot, and a link will be there in the description if you would rather watch these videos over there. Also, I just posted a video over on the second channel, and again, thank you all so much for the love and support you've already shown on there. New content coming over there weekly. Link will be in the description if you want to check it out. So if you're ready to talk about airplane tragedy and conspiracy, then stick around after the ad as we discuss if brace positions are meant to kill you. Also, the sponsor for this video once again knew exactly what I would be doing, and they were cool with it. So one day, I will find something they will not touch, I assure you. But before we get started, I want to thank today's sponsor and friend of the channel, AG1. If you've been on the channel for any amount of time, then you know about AG1. And that's because AG1 is your one-stop shop for all your pre and probiotics, multivitamins, and multiminerals, and much more in one easy drink. It's hard to be healthy, so the easier, the better. And it's hard to get easier than AG1. Because with just 8 to 12 ounces of water and a spoonful of AG1, you're good to go. So instead of a bunch of different doses every day, you can just keep up with one easy drink. Since taking AG1, my general moods improved, my energy throughout the days improved, and there's a bunch of factors that go into that, like exercise and eating right. But when you start putting the things in your body that your body's been craving, you'll be amazed by how much more you can get done. And AG1's not a chore either. Not only is it easy to make, but it's just a delightfully sweet taste that I enjoy along with my morning coffee. Also, AG1's got something new to share today. That's because AG1 now also offers omega-3 supplements. It's funny, I had just started buying milk at the store that had omega-3 infused into it because I was like, I should probably get some of that because, you know, you hear cool stuff about it. And then immediately AG1's like, hey, we just started doing omega-3. So would you look at that? And AG1's omega-3 is sourced from wild-caught small fish and is flavored with natural lemon. So it's hard to incorporate an easier, healthier step into your morning routine than with this. And if you haven't tried AG1 yet, then now is the perfect time to get in on the offer. That's because for a limited time, if you go to drinkag1.com and use the discount code Wendigoon, or head to the link in the description or scan my QR code, not only will you get $76 worth of free extras like 5 free travel packs of AG1, a shaker bottle, a bottle of vitamin D3 and K2, and a metal canister, but right now you'll also get AG's omega-3s thrown in for good measure. That is right, what's not to love about this? So to get started with AG1 for less than $3 a day, again, head to the link in the description at drinkag1.com/wendigoon or scan the QR code to get in on this incredible offer today. Thank you to AG1 as always for sponsoring the channel. It means the most. Check them out, the link in the description, and we are back to the video. We are going to go ahead and get into it, but as always, thank you for watching. The idea of bracing for impact is a normal human reaction. If you are about to fall or about to be hit, people will naturally tense up in order to avoid the brunt of the damage. So while part of it may come natural, there wasn't a movement to standardize brace positions in commercial aviation until the 1950s. It wasn't until the 1950s when organizations like the FAA began to analyze crash reports and injuries to see the difference between what works and what doesn't. Since airplanes have a limited amount of space and weight, most of the implementations to keep people safe fall back on the passenger. So in the early 1960s, practices began to be implemented to keep people as safe as possible in the event of a plane crash. Early tests showed that in survivable accidents, the majority of injuries come from people either being thrown into the wall or the seat back in front of them. So in the early 1960s, airplane brace positions began to be implemented in order to prevent this. However, they were far different than what they are today.
Now that I'm over here in my little demonstration corner, when airlines first began regulating brace positions, the idea was to reinforce what the seatbelt was already doing. So initial brace positions told passengers to sit against the back of their chair like this, and then use their arms to cross over their chest and try to grab on to the seat back behind them. At the same time, your feet are to be kept firmly on the ground in order to move as little as possible. And in a perfect world, this strategy makes sense. Theoretically, if someone could keep themselves from moving in the event of a crash, well, that would be the least likely way to get injured. However, that is easier said than done in a 200-mile-per-hour plane crash.
This seemed fine until more information regarding airplane crashes began to be made known. For one, while yes, hypothetically, if you could hold the weight of your body against the seat and not move at all, that would be really cool. But as mentioned, no matter how hard you hold on, you're going to get thrown forward regardless. This just adds an extra step to where your shoulder gets ripped out of socket before you are. Airplane seats are designed in order to mitigate as much of the force of an impact as possible, and they do a pretty good job at it. But regardless, some force will still be transmitted to the passenger. So people began to change their thought process to see how can we keep that force being transferred to the passenger as minimal as possible. It should also be mentioned that everything I'm saying applies to, once again, survivable plane crashes. Airplane crashes in themselves are exceedingly rare. It is by far the safest mode of transportation, except for maybe like a subway, but those tend to be more selective. And out of those rare crashes, the vast majority of crashes are on takeoff or landing. So the plane is moving relatively slow and near the ground. This normally results in the plane skidding across the ground or turning over. Again, a relatively survivable instance. If you're in a scenario, which is super rare out of the already super rare plane crashes, but if you're in a scenario where the plane's at like cruising altitude and just drops straight to the ground, or the plane is flying full speed into something, then, you know, just get in whatever position you feel comfortable with. Tragically, over the following decades, the instances that would provide the best data as what works and what doesn't in a plane crash was plane crashes. Likely the most influential plane crash that has ever happened when it comes to determining passenger safety was the Kegworth Air disaster. On January the 8th, 1989, the British Midland Airways Flight 92 was making a flight from the London Heathrow Airport to the Belfast International Airport. The plane itself was new for the time, a Boeing 737-400. Shortly after takeoff, a fan blade broke in the left engine of the aircraft. Initially, the damage wasn't that severe, but it did cause smoke to begin to fill the cabin of the aircraft. Now, modern airplanes are made to run just fine on one engine if the need requires. So all the pilots had to do was shut down the left engine and use the right one until they land. However, on older models of 737s, which the pilots were familiar with, air would be drawn from the right side of the aircraft into the main cabin. So typically, if the cabin was filling up with smoke, that meant something was going wrong on the right side of the plane. Not knowing that on the new 737-400, it drawed air from both sides of the plane. So the pilot shut down the right engine, and coincidentally, at the same time, smoke began to dissipate. So they thought they had solved the problem, when in reality, they had turned off the only still fully operational engine. Because of the issue, the plane was diverted to the East Midlands Airport. But as they got low and tried to increase thrust on the defunct engine they thought was the only working one, it caused the broken fan blade to be pulled further into the engine and completely disable it. At this point, they were moving too slow and were too close to the ground to start up the right engine, and the plane crashed. It hit the ground and skipped over a road, stopping just short of the runway. In this tragic accident, 47 people died and 74 were seriously injured. In the wake of this tragedy, the UK Civil Aviation Authority began to analyze the results, based on an investigation of the crash as well as survivors' accounts. 10 seconds before they made impact, the pilot realized they were going to crash and announced throughout the cabin to brace for impact. Because of this, authorities were able to put together an analysis of what worked and what didn't. The data from this crash was actually so influential that in November of 2016, the International Board for Research into Aircraft Crash Events, or IBRACE, was formed in the wake of the investigation, which is a board made up of doctors and aviation authorities across the world in order to best prepare passengers for plane accidents. In the course of the Kegworth investigation, several other airline accidents were also brought in for analysis. Across all these incidents, there were some common through lines. A lot of the severe injuries and even deaths occurred because people were being thrown forward, which caused injury to either their neck or head. On top of that, non-life-threatening injuries like broken arms or legs came from them flailing about and hitting something inside of the cabin. There also proved to be issues with just keeping your head upright in the first place. Not only does that increase your risk of being hit by something like falling baggage from overhead compartments, But it led to some more terrifying injuries as well. In 1983, a fire began around the lavatory area of Air Canada Flight 797. This was while the plane was in midair and the plane had to make an emergency landing. However, because there was a fire inside of the pressurized cabin, when the plane landed and the doors of the fuselage were thrown open, it caused a wave of oxygen to flush into the plane itself and cause something known as a flashover. Essentially, when this new fuel source flooded into the plane, everything above the seats caught fire. This led to a lot of people being horrifically burned on their face, and the following smoke led to panic, and several people were unable to exit the aircraft. And tragically, in this event where the plane had to have an emergency landing and landed without impact, regardless, 23 people died. Instances like this and other airplane accidents led to aviation authorities making new rulings regarding the brace position. And this has led to the brace position as we know it today. Later, standardized brace positions would make the following adjustments. The primary one being, since it is near impossible to hold yourself against the back of the chair, instead anticipate the fact that you'll be thrown forward and start at the seat back in front of you. For most United States Airlines, the standard practice is to place one hand on the seat back and the other hand overlapped with it, with your forehead cradled between your arms. In this sense, your arms effectively work as an airbag, making sure that any of the energy that's transferred in the crash goes to your forearms rather than your head. And while you might have a bad time if you break your arms in a plane crash, that is better than shattering your skull. Among various UK airlines, rather than placing your hands in front of you, instead you place your forehead flat on the seat back and overlock your hands along the back of your neck. This is done for one, to protect your brain stem, but also to protect yourself from any debris that could be flying around. Think about it, if any baggages come down from the overhead compartments, if a plane goes from 200 miles an hour to 0 miles an hour, those bags become missiles. Not to mention things like shattered glass that could be flying through the cabin if the fuselage is damaged. Now, some have argued that putting your head directly against the seat in front of you with no cushion from your arms can increase the possibility of a head injury, which is why in the US it's still the overlap, and in UK and other regions, it's along the back of your head. Also, it is important in either position to overlap your hands instead of interlocking them, because if you interlock them in the event of a crash, you're probably going to break your fingers. One of the main injuries that is seen in a plane crash is injuries to the limbs, because people's arms and legs tend to fly out at the moment of impact. So while these two maneuvers take care of your hands, different regulatory bodies also have different ideas when it comes to your legs. By United States doctrine, most airlines still advise you to keep your feet firmly planted to keep a more stable point for your torso and head. Whereas in areas like the UK, protocol is to tuck your legs as tightly as you can to the seat you're sitting on. This is to prevent a common injury in plane crashes, when your legs fly forward and hit the bar of the seat in front of you, which in a lot of cases, as you can imagine, breaks your shin. Whereas if your legs are tucked against your own chair, they are less likely to fly out and hit something. However, once again, it's a trade-off, because if your legs are tucked in against your chair, that is a less stable point for your upper body than to have them firmly planted. But similar to the hand thing, both doctrines have their own arguments either way. Of course, in both of these strategies, you are firmly wrapped against the seatbelt across your lap. This helps with jackknifing and submarining. Jackknifing is when you're sitting away from the seatbelt and are thrown into it, which can cause abdominal injuries. And submarining is when you're so far back and leaned backwards that at the moment of impact, you slide under the seatbelt, and neither of which is a good idea. Also, in both of these strategies, your head is ducked below the line of seats. As mentioned, that helps with flying debris, but in cases like the Canadian Air flight mentioned earlier, it prevents injury from things like a flashover. Now, of course, everything I mentioned so far is assuming there is a seat back in front of you to hold on to. If you cannot get to the seat back in front of you, so in other words, if you're sitting in an emergency exit row, on the front row of a plane, or just too short to reach the seat, then it's advised to adopt something called the pike position. It's effectively the same thing, but since you can't get to the seat in front of you, you just fold yourself all the way down. I need to bring the microphone down. Thank you. You fold yourself all the way down underneath your legs, either grabbing your own forearms to keep yourself compact, or, as mentioned earlier, overlapping them along the back of your head to protect yourself from debris or head injury. It's also advised, again, because there's no seat in front of you for you to hit your shins on, to keep your feet firmly planted to, once again, give yourself further stability. And if your feet cannot touch the floor, again, for children or short people, just tuck them against the chair as tightly as you can. The strategy with all of these is to make yourself as compact as possible. You're not going to be able to fully put off the force of the plane crashing, so you want to be in a position where the force can do as little damage to you as possible. The only situation where the strategy is severely different is for flight attendants who have a backwards facing seat. Again, crashes tend to happen when a plane is moving forward. So all of those positions I just showed were to prevent you from being thrown forward or mitigating the damages when you are. Well, if a flight attendant is facing the back of an airplane, then they're not going to be thrown forward in a crash. They're going to be thrown backward. So then best practice goes back to the old strategy, placing your head against the seat back as hard as possible and either putting your hands underneath your thighs or across your chest. The backwards facing seat is actually one of the safest places to be in the event of a plane crash, because all of the force is pushing you into the cushioned seat you're already sitting in, rather into the metal seat that you're sitting behind. In both instances, airplane seats actually do a really good job at absorbing most of the energy from an impact, and all of the brace positions are designed so that the majority of that force transfers to the chair rather than your body. And those practices make sense. Think about situations like airbags. The entire idea of an airbag is that a surface comes out and catches you, slowing your speed from flying into the front of the vehicle. And while specific cases of which form is best can be argued, from survivor reports to crash test investigations, it's no question that brace positions up your survivability rate by an extreme degree, according to some studies as much as 3 times. That is, of course, when they're not trying to kill you, as the conspiracy states. So the conspiracy theory that inspired this video is that these brace positions are actually meant to kill you. It is no secret that airlines or airplane manufacturers will do everything in their power to pay out as little as possible in the event of an accident. Not only does every institution do everything in their power to point the blame somewhere else, the airplane manufacturer will say it's the airline's fault, and the airline will say that it's air traffic control or the airport's fault, and the airport will point back at the manufacturer. But when someone is eventually forced to foot the bill, they will lowball those affected as much as possible under threat of a lengthy and expensive legal battle otherwise. And while new legislation is being made every year in order to prevent this, it still happens. So the theory says, what if the airline would rather you just die so they don't have to pay out your injuries? The logistics of this go as follows, but there are some differences depending on who you ask. Effectively, it states that by placing your head against the seat in front of you, a seat which again absorbs most of the shock of a crash, that force goes through the chair in front of you into the top of your head and snaps your neck, ensuring that the airline has to deal with as few injured clients as possible. Accents to this theory go even further. One example being, the reason that you are told to curl up and protect your face is so that after the crash, your teeth are intact, meaning you are easier to be identified from your dental records. Positions like the pike position for those on the front row of the plane are made so that their head is in a perfect missile position to fly, I guess, through the seatbelt into the wall in front of them, instantly shattering their skull. Another component is that the oxygen mask that drops down from the above head compartment actually deprives you of oxygen, which makes you pass out, which then makes your unconscious body flail around when the plane hits the ground, meaning you're more likely to die. Which I thought, according to the theory, you're more likely to die if you do the thing you're supposed to and hold your head against the kill seat in front of you, but whatever. Or even that the life jackets that are issued in the event of a water landing is so that your body can float up to the surface in order to be identified. Again, I would argue that life jackets also have the habit of life and not drowning, but I digress. So let's talk about this theory for a second. Not even addressing the fact that hundreds of thousands of people across aviation and regulation companies and stuff like that would have to be in on the plot. And there would have to be a countless number of people that know airliners are designed to kill people in the event of an accident, and they're just okay with that, I guess. Not even addressing that. The regulatory bodies that come up with the brace position aren't the ones who have to pay out if there's a plane crash. Brace positions are designed by like the FAA and iBrace. While you could argue it's suspicious if Boeing or American Airlines were the people coming up with these positions, And I can agree with that somewhat. If American Airlines told me on a perfectly normal plane to sit still and everything was going to be okay, I would probably assume they were going to shoot me. But it's not them who is coming up with the crash positions. It is the people who regulate and make legislation around them to ensure customers are safe and that they pay their dues when customers aren't. But sure, you could argue FAA and airlines and all that are in cahoots and have this massive conspiracy worked out between them, sure. But in concept, the theory doesn't make sense. It says that companies do this so they don't have to pay out injuries in the event of a crash. But you know what's way more expensive than injuries? Dying. While there is new legislation that dictates the minimum amount an airline is required to pay in the event of serious bodily injury is around $140,000 US, and there's new legislation on the way that brings that number up to more like $300,000, companies that have to pay out in an accident will argue the legitimacy of these events and try to get the number down as low as $10,000 or $20,000. Whereas when someone dies, the payout is normally in the millions. According to Keystone Law, in the United States, the average payment when someone dies in an airplane crash is $5.2 million. Now, the United States is way ahead of other countries because the US doesn't have a limit on like bereavement lawsuits, whereas countries like England and Wales cap it around £15,000. In the US, if someone you know dies because of malfeasance on an airline or airplane manufacturer's part, you can pretty much argue for whatever you want to be paid. Now, it is true that there are some injury lawsuits in airplane crashes that far exceed this number, with some people who have permanent injuries that don't allow them to go back to work or they have to be in rehab for several years. Those lawsuits can be $8, $10 million. But those are exceedingly rare. Typically, people have injuries that they can walk away from or recover after some point in time, or they die. On average, by far, companies pay out way more for death than they do injuries. Death can also go way higher than the 5 million number. In cases where like CEOs or something like that are killed, the number will be 20, 30 million. That's because a lot of the time in these cases, the damages that are given to family is based off of potential income that that person could have made throughout the rest of their life, which try to think about that for more than 10 seconds without being radicalized. It's way more expensive for companies if you die rather than just get injured. But even outside of that, the brace position just makes sense. In every other safety requirement we have for transportation, in car wrecks, for example, seat belts are designed to keep you from being thrown forward, and airbags are designed to give you a soft cushion to be thrown forward into. And we also have a ton of data that backs the brace position idea. Every now and then, the FAA or some aviation authority will have a controlled crash as an experiment, where they load a passenger plane up with a bunch of crash test dummies and run it into the ground to see what happens. Sounds like a cool weekend. Well, in 2012, a bunch of different television companies like Discovery Channel in the United States and Channel 4 in the UK partnered together to buy a Boeing 727, load it full of dummies, and run it into the Mexican desert to see what would happen. What's funny about this is normally when like the FAA does a test or something similar, they do it at a military base or in the middle of nowhere, so the entire flight is remote controlled. But when all these television companies came together to do it, the United States wouldn't let them do it anywhere, so they had to go to Mexico. And the only place they could do it in Mexico was in an open desert that was near a city. So the Mexican government wouldn't let them do the entire thing remote controlled because, you know, the airplane will be flying above a populated area. So a pilot team had to fly the plane until it got out of the city and then got over a desert. And then they parachuted out, and from there it was remote controlled into the ground. And with the crash test dummies, they had several of them in brace positions, they had several of them sitting upright, and they found that the brace position had a way higher chance of survivability. The largest injuries came from conditions outside of a brace position's control. For example, since the plane hit nose first, people sitting near the front of the plane tended to be the most injured, but there's not really a position that can help with that. That also doesn't always mean sitting near the front of the plane is the most dangerous. Sometimes planes will crash with the tail hitting first or on the side. But from areas of similar exposure, the brace position saved a lot of lives. The dummies that had used the brace position were more prone to things like ankle or leg injuries, which is exactly what the brace position is supposed to do. It transfers that energy there rather than your chest or neck. Dummies that did not have the brace position, their legs were perfectly fine, but their necks were snapped. I'll let you pick which one you want to be. But even outside of test, we have real-world examples of the brace position working. In 1991, Scandinavian Flight 751 had a major wreck upon landing. I mean, look at pictures of this. The plane is broken up into three pieces. It looks like it would be a huge casualty count. But before the crash, a brace position was ordered and flight attendants walked around ensuring that everyone was in the proper position. And miraculously, everyone lived. Sure, there's various injuries to arms and legs, but everyone was still breathing. Because of that, this instance is often referred to as the Miracle at Katrora. In other instances, like US Airways Flight 1549 or the Miracle at the Hudson, the event which the movie Sully is based on, the majority of the 100% survival rate there can be attributed to the captain's quick thinking, but another factor that led to everyone getting off the plane was everyone adopted the brace position. Sure, the plane didn't hit the water hard enough to kill anyone, probably, but if someone got their head thrown forward and got knocked out, they probably couldn't have got off the plane in time. And in several survivors' testimonies of plane wrecks that resulted in some fatalities, several survivors have contributed their survival to the brace position. They even tested this on Mythbusters. They had a whole episode where they discussed the myth that the brace position is designed to kill you. And while sure made for TV, you could argue the legitimacy of it, in every test they did, the dummies that adopted the brace position received far fewer injuries than those that did not. Also, Cary Byron was one of my first childhood crushes, so with respect to my wife, of course, I'll believe whatever she tells me. All in all, it is fun to theorize and think about these things in a sort of morbid concept, and I am not arguing the legitimacy or good intentions of companies that are involved in airplane crashes. But again, the brace position isn't even designed by them, and by all data that we have, it seems to work. While things like this are fun to theorize and think about, maybe not the best idea to tell people things that could quite literally get them killed. But of course, if you yourself believe this, that, you know, airplanes are trying to euthanize you like a chicken in the event of a crash, and if you're ever in a plane crash and want to follow through on that belief till the very end, well, that's between you and God and probably some attorneys. Regardless of the theory, I think that the history of brace positions is pretty cool. How through these awful events, we were able to put something useful out of it. There was good information gained from all the bad. And I think that's interesting, and if you think that's interesting, that's really cool, and I just want to say thank you for watching. The conspiracy theory kind of gave me an excuse to talk about the history of brace positions, something you're probably familiar with, but never really thought about before. And it's interesting how like one bit of information led to another. And yeah, I just thought it was kind of neat. Again, if you want to check out these videos over on Spotify, link will be in the description. And if you want even more of my content for some reason, head on over to Wendigang, where we will try to maintain weekly uploads moving forward. And thank you guys so much for the support you've already shown on both. New content on the way, and this should do it for now. But before I go, I just want to say thank you for watching. I hope that you enjoyed, and I will see you in the next one. Bye! Also, I really wanted to show this clip from the movie Airplane, but I was trying to, you know, set up the story in the beginning, and it seemed a little in poor taste to mention it in the midst of like people dying and stuff. So I'm gonna do that now.
All right, now everybody, get in crash position.